The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Fagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horrifically named podcast series, but the QA is the important part, which obviously stands for question and answer, as we chat out just what's going on in the world of tech right now, and we make this a more interactive conversation, as I've already got a fantastic group of people in the live chat this week. Aditya, Gary, Streamy Boys, Gabaletta, Erguys, Dave Burns is Slick Rick. Was I missing when I said Simon? I think I got everybody so far. So, everybody, welcome. We're full bore. Holiday season. Maybe you might be stepping outside your little pandemic bubble like my family has been. We're very, very carefully trying to set up some family events. All of us are vaxxed and multiple vaxxed and boosted. So here's the funny thing. We just got back from a road trip where we went to go visit my wife's family for a brief period of time. There are a number of immunocompromised people in my wife's family. So even with vaccines, lots of social distancing, lots of mask wearing. We met up with my folks and then drove to go visit my sister. My sister has cats. We finally got to see my sister's new place. She's been living in this home for like over a year and like finally got to go and visit her at this awesome new house that she's just bought. And the hilarious thing is I was really anxious, mostly because I'm deathly allergic to cats. In the past, with the right drug antihistamine combo, I can get myself about 2 hours before I can physically feel like my throat is starting to close up and my eyes are starting to swell. All the tissue around my eyes is starting to swell and I'm just like draining and I can't breathe. It's pretty bad. I don't know what NVIDIA broadcast is doing. Come on. There you go. I might turn it off. The last two times we've run the NVIDIA software for tracking my face, it's gotten real squirrely as I do things like touch my face. It's so annoying. Come on. You can find me. There it is. So yes, my sister has cats. We couldn't stay with her, but I was really anxious because this was for Thanksgiving dinner. She was going to host the Thanksgiving dinner. I did not want to be an erupting ball of mucus during
my favorite holiday of the year. So obnoxiously, even though we're all vaccinated and boosted and we're all healthy, I still wore my mask. So on a combination of 2 weeks prep of FloNase and like maybe dosing myself a little harder on the Zyrtec than I probably should have, I also kept wearing my mask indoors. This is the best I've ever done around cats. So like that 2 hour window got extended to a whole day. Like again, I don't think I would have been able to hang if I had been staying with my sister and her husband. Like I think overnight that probably would have done me in. But this is amazing. So the one silver lining of global pandemic was I finally had the sort of material motivation to try wearing a mask around cats, and it worked like gangbusters. It was phenomenal. So like for 2 days back to back, like from sun up to sundown, pretty much doing a whole bunch of prep and working in the kitchen and sitting down and eating a meal with my family, and my eyes were starting to get itchy because my mask isn't blocking my eyes, but I could breathe. So I feel like this is the win I needed out of 2 years of terrible, terrible global catastrophe. I figured out how to stay around cats longer. Oh man. Oh, and yeah, people, I still have not seen, you know, like Simon Says Hypno is joking about cats. Streamy Boys, I love cats, but the musical not so much. I haven't seen, so I saw Cats on Broadway a long time ago, and the music is catchy. It's not really my jam for stage for a stage show, but I've never seen the movie, and I'm scared to give the movie a shot. Aditya, Anil, Juan, why do you look so good today? Well, Aditya, flattery will get you everywhere. I don't know. Like again, I am struggling to find my flow again. I've been saying this a lot over these last couple podcasts, right? Like, well, this is going to be sort of a pajama podcast, and this week is going to be just sort of a more casual chat. I don't have news this week. We're not going to do the news block this week. We're going to play around with the format of the show this week. If I've done something accidentally to make myself look a little better this week, I'll take it. From Snorkel, I use a mask when outside during spring and tree pollen season. It does help a lot. You know what? Isn't it so silly though? Like I'm walking into someone's home and I'm feeling really like anxious about like, hey, I'm kind of wearing a mask. This kind of gives off the image like I don't think they're taking care of their stuff, or I think they're dirty or filthy or full of disease. And by the end of this, it was just like, you know what? These things are so practical. Why have I never tried just throwing on a mask? I know I'm breathing in cat dander and it's causing inflammation in my lungs and it causes my throat to swell shut. I can feel it as I'm talking, like the back of my throat starts getting itchy and raw. It starts locking up, and I even have a hard time swallowing sometimes. Why have I never thought to do this before? It's like the efficacy of masks in the context of disease finally clicked, like, oh, yeah, they're good for other things too. You wear a mask when you work with hazardous materials. Back when you were doing some woodworking, you would put on a mask because you weren't breathing in sawdust and stuff. What, why are you this slow? But I get there. I get there eventually. Ah, JMX Warrior, he looks good because he's in red. Then Simon says he's pretty in pink. You know what? I think I do look pretty good in pink, even for some of my psoriasis scarring, like around my face. Like I think pink kind of highlights a healthy glow. Oh, and Barry Johnson, everyone's saying hey. Everyone say hey, Barry Johnson, in the chat. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. Let's see, keeps your face warm in the winter. Masks, great. We were in that high desert country, you know, New Mexico driving through Arizona, and it was actually scary warm for Thanksgiving this year, like, you know, global warming. But you get out of a nice, warm, toasty car, and it's cold, bitter air hitting you, and you throw on a mask, and all of that kind of stays contained, starts warming your face back up. They're just so dang practical. I love it. I love masks. I'm probably always going to have one out with me whenever I'm out in public now. Like, I'm going to be trying to hit some trade shows over the next year. I feel people are gross, and I will wear a mask. So, I want to break this show up into two kind of major sections. I do want to cover a little housekeeping, because last week I managed to kind of pull off a rambling hangout chat from the road. I don't know that I would have called last week's show a podcast either, but we had some time to kind of chat, and I didn't really do housekeeping or anything like that. I totally failed to promote the contest. We're going to announce the contest giveaway, the winner, one more headphones hooking up, some color buds to give away to one lucky individual. And then what I learned from this is going to kind of influence, I want to start doing some things like giving away old phones. You know, they were review devices. I can't claim they're going to work. Some of them might be international products. I really can't ship internationally unless some of this stuff really starts taking off and we can afford to start shipping internationally. But I want to start playing with some of the mechanics of that. And I learned a lot on this last contest of what not to do. Unfortunately, so I do apologize to the folks at OnePlus, while I also thank, not OnePlus, One More, while I also thank the folks at One More for hooking up a great little pair of earbuds to hook up. We have the winner, and we'll talk about that here in just a sec. Do you need to send a shout-out to Anderspand, subscribing with Prime, Erguys TV, also subscribing with Prime. Thank you very much for supporting the production and the stream on this channel. And then I also want to throw this comment up here real quick. I think it's a subconscious American thing. It's been ingrained in the culture to look at things we don't do as weird. Americans seem to have always made fun of Asian countries for always wearing masks during flu seasons and such, even before the pandemic. And there definitely is a thread of that in American culture, like suck it up, walk it off, don't have feelings, rub some dirt on it. You know, like, I don't know. We have this fixation with trying to chest puff. Right? Like, we're always just trying to present as tough. And you know what? I'm tired of it. I'd rather look scared and weak and be able to breathe. I'd rather look freaky and hyper-reactive and not get the flu at a trade show. I'm over that. I have no more Fs to give. So Streamy Boy, see, this is the right reason to not enter one of my contests. I didn't enter this contest because I already have the color buds too. I love it. Love it. These were such a happy little wallet friendly active noise cancellation and tiny, just so little. I mean, it's the color buds and the ear fun are like my top picks this year. If you don't want to have a brick in your pocket for charging your buds. These things are so discreet and yet still have all those fun, like, techie bits. So yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. One More, still one of my, like, consistently one of my favorite brands for making fun consumer tech, consumer audio, just really, really brilliant stuff. So, why don't we just quickly run down the housekeeping that we missed from last week? I know I just made that sound like a terrible homework assignment. I will announce the winner of who's going to get these new color buds. These aren't the color buds I'm giving away, by the way. Like, these are mine. I'm keeping these. We're going to be shipping out a brand new set to the winner of the giveaway. Get this out of the way here. Gabaletta, I mean, again, I don't know that you can. I don't think this is true. I think you're incorrect. It's like, while I would love another set of earbuds, I already have too many in my drawer, so I would rather let someone else get it. I already have too many. I don't think that's a thing. Gabby, I think you either have, no, I think you always have not enough. I can't imagine a world where I don't have like specific earbuds for every song that I enjoy. I can't listen to Rage Against the Machine. I don't have my Rage Against the Machine earbuds. Streamy voice, exactly. There's no such thing as too many. Don't stop till you get enough. And then you never get enough. And I just copyright struck my video by singing that one bar. Yes. Oh, see, in Tech Tech Potato, like I feel like this is appropriate here too. Sorry, the chat just jumped on me. I don't like earbuds. I use sport headphones that go around the back of my neck. Totally appropriate. And I think that's also the one biggie with this whole trend in true wireless. So we start to lose sight of some of those other options. Like, I almost always have my Aftershocks in arm's reach. And I don't even have the newest Aftershocks. These are my Aftershocks Air. Is that what they're called? I can't remember. But the newer ones have an even better designed casing for, you know, the drivers and stuff. So I have open ear, I've got closed back, I've got gaming headsets. I feel like there are all these other solutions that still need to catch up a bit with wireless and true wireless and all that fun stuff. Here, let me scroll back down on the chat. Yeah, Andrew, like, okay, I knew if Fat Produce was in the chat, mentioning something about Aftershocks would draw him out of the woodwork. And Andrew's like, Aftershocks are the best, absolutely my favorite everyday headphones. Just brilliant. Yo, it's so funny. Like, I got to show those off again over Thanksgiving, over this holiday, and people still react like it's magic. And I feel like, you know what? That's the kind of joy I want to spread. I'm so tired of this, like, well, this is the most commonly popular thing, so everything needs to be like that. AirPods. AirPods are the most commonly popular Bluetooth true wireless headphone because of all the iPhone users. So everyone's just trying to emulate that. And we lose all of these little sort of specific differences as we go through and we kind of compare and contrast all of this gear. And then you have someone try something truly novel. You know, like the family member that jumped on, I'm being real cagey. Some of my family don't like being called out and talked about on podcasts and stuff, but they tried it. They are very much outdoor hiking, wildlife and nature, but they don't, you know, like the idea that they'd have something that was pretty good for phone calls and could still kind of like lightly play some music as sort of a soundtrack for a good hike. They'd never really used anything. They didn't like AirPods. They're, you know, you have to turn them up too loud or they're not blocking out noise, blah, 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 blah. And so if you want to go open ear, bone conduction is the way to go. So I put them on. They're kind of like, oh yeah, so it's just kind of like having speakers by your ears. That's not that fancy. And then you say, okay, now plug your ears. And they hear, you know, like the music is still not only playing into their brain, but it just got louder and just the sound improved by plugging their ears. And like you just see this light bulb moment click on that this is something different. And I love that experience. Like I get so lit up when we can really share that experience where it's so far removed from what's been comfortably familiar that they realize that this is different tech. So it's not even like they don't even sit there and try and compare. It's, oh, well, they obviously have recognized this is not like AirPods. This is not like in-the-ear earbuds. This is not like the cans that they want to wear on an airplane. They have just snapped. This is something for this situation that I have never heard before. And I love that. Oh, so much fun. All right. Now let's actually knock out the housekeeping. So sort of over the last 2 weeks, I've been kind of busy. You know, especially with the road trip, we still got some major videos out there. Click this over here. So those Earfun that I just held up, I don't know if they're still on sale, but the Earfun Free Pro 2, I don't know that you can find a more tech complete earbud solution for this low of a price. Not only did they launch on one sale, they launched on a combo of sales. It brought the price down to like $56 for active noise cancellation. I think the only thing they might be missing is in-ear detection and wireless charging in the case. But like everything else, low latency game mode, really good mics. I mean, not the best mics, but pretty good triple mic arrays. Just a stunning combination of technologies for not a lot of cash. Obviously, we did the Color Buds giveaway. This one felt kind of funny because like I posted the giveaway for the Color Buds the day after I posted my review of the Earfun. but yes, we will announce that winner here shortly. Then I wrote up an editorial, something that I've been very concerned about. I saw Ian, Dr. Ian, in the chat. And I, you know, at some point, I think I need to have him back on the show and just kind of chat about this next generation of SoC. I'm very concerned. So we got news on the Dimensity 9000. We're going to be hearing very soon what's going on with Qualcomm's response and the Snapdragon, the next generation of Snapdragons. It's not going to be called the 898. We do know that Qualcomm's going to be changing their naming. But we keep getting these increasingly powerful mobile SoCs. And I feel like this really came to a head going from 2020 to 2021. We get this Snapdragon 888. We get this, you know, the newest, Simon says Hypno. The Snapdragon 898 codename is Thermonuclear. That's hilarious. Sorry. But I wrote up this editorial just to kind of express some of my concerns. And I'm pinning a lot to some of the marketing slides from MediaTek. I'm really trying not to just pick on MediaTek. Apple faced some challenges with the A14 in terms of power draw and thermals and GPU performance. Qualcomm and Samsung, with the Samsung Exynos, they also had issues. Like, there's a reason why every single smartphone manufacturer over this last year did something to rein in the performance of these SoCs. There was some kind of scheduler or CPU throttling or GPU limiting or, you know, other adaptive technologies for the screens, every single company. And I would say Xiaomi was probably the least restrictive, and those phones ran hot and would often suffer worse performance in sustained tasks because there wasn't anything reining in the power draw of these chips. And I would really love to know, especially because, you know, this is housekeeping and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. I don't have a ton of news block to really dig into. For the chat, right now, maybe you just spent some time with family and friends. Maybe you got together for a Thanksgiving, especially if you're in the United States. Maybe it was just a normal weekend for you. Maybe you did some video calls. Have you ever been sitting with a family member and they've ever expressed, I really desperately need significantly more computer style compute power to the point where I'd be willing to sacrifice battery? If you've ever talked to them about upgrading their phone or replacing their phone or a tablet or a laptop or something like that, to me, and I come from a pretty nerdy family, like we're a bunch of engineers and teachers and like people that fundamentally dig into tech as a resource for getting our work done. Time and time again, it's battery life. That's like their big thing. My sister's on a Pixel 4a now. Unfortunately, her Pixel 3a died. Her husband is still on a Pixel 3a. My brother is on a Moto Power. I couldn't even tell what version of Moto it was, but it was one of the cheapest ones, but had the biggest battery. My dad's on the 4A. My mom is still like leading the horsepower race in my family. My mom is the second place horsepower power smartphone. And what does she have? She has a OnePlus 6T. That's second place. I mean, I'm in first. Second place is a Snapdragon 845. I mean, like, I could not be shown better evidence that high-level technology users in my family, increasingly, their demand is battery life. They have not needed more compute power to achieve their daily tasks. Now, this is also backed up by the fact that, like, my sister and her husband, they like to game on a Switch. My brother is super into tabletop and board games and things like that, so he's not really playing a lot of video games these days. My dad's game of choice is, like, Spider and Free Cell and different forms of solitaire. My mom is mostly teched out for having things like she just wants to, she does play a few games, but she also has an iPad. So there's gaming back and forth there, but she really likes that her phone is also like the key to her Tesla. So things like that. I'm increasingly concerned because we see these amazing bar graphs from Qualcomm, from Apple, from MediaTek, where they keep showing us, like, we're going to give you 16 to 20% more compute power, okay? But then if we try to really dig into their slides and we see that power, the performance to power battery draw ratio, that line keeps going. So it's not 20% more performance at the same power tier as the previous generation chip. It's like 20% more performance at like 10% more battery draw. And I don't think we need that. I'm the one who's trying to tell people, use your phones for more, do more with them, try to replace your laptop with your phone. And I don't think we need that. But if we follow that same chart and we see those improvements in SoC design, we could say, hey, we're going to give you reasonably within the same envelope of performance, but now we can do it at 10% less power draw than the previous generation. If I could reliably use the Snapdragon 888 at a higher tier with less power draw, that to me would be a huge win. I would be all over that. And that's how I felt going from the 865 to the 888. We saw those same charts, and what I desperately wanted was 865 tier power at less battery draw. 865 tier performance, I should say, at less battery draw. And I feel like it would be okay if we had an off year just to refine and get a handle on these new CPU cores, these new core layouts and SoC designs, really get 5G under our thumbs and the radio management and the performance there. I'm so tired of big benchmark scores being the deciding factor for mobility when we've already been grossly overbuying for compute power, I would say since the Snapdragon 845. Just the fact that the 700 series Qualcomms still struggle to outperform the 845 in all tasks means to me we're good, or I should say average consumers have been good for compute power. Again, I keep going back. Like, I pull out that little Huawei Nova with a Snapdragon 625. And there's nothing that chip really struggles at doing until you get into high-tier laptop replacement stuff. That thing can still render, can shoot 4K video and can render HD video. Like, you really got to ask yourself, what are you doing on your phone that you can't get done with a mid-ranger SoC from 4 years ago? All right, give me a second just to scroll back because I want to get through. From Walt Knows Tech. Qualcomm Snapdragon getting their naming ideas from HDMI. That's why they're changing the name, and they're not going to make it less confusing. I guarantee you changing the name is going to make this more confusing. I really miss, like, you know, you had the 845, 855, 865, 888. Come on, don't do that. That's silly. But it was all because I think they had the 865++ that they called the 870. So it would have been confusing if they had an 875. That's so dumb. I love the folks at Qualcomm. I've done some great work with the folks at Qualcomm. That, to me, you call it the 865 Super, the 865 Ti. You don't call it the 870 because it's not a 70. It's a 65++. Anyway, Simon says, Hypno, my mother is always asking if her new phone will run Crysis. Dustadore, none of my family know. I've had upgrade conversations, but nothing about power. From Svetakus, the Pixel 6 Pro and iPhone Pro 13 Pro are the coolest running phones in my family gathering this year. I mean, so a lot of my family kind of dug what I was doing with my phones. None of them seemed interested. Like, seriously, they were happy for me to take photos and shoot video from my really fancy phones. Couldn't be bothered. Like, Juan will be the photographer and documentarian of the family. We're good. And like, again, my sister's pulling off shots. Her Christmas card this year is shot from the Pixel 4a. She's good. Like, her baby and her cat photos, phenomenal. Like, they look great. They're, you know, there are a couple things, like, I can pull off portraiture and candid shots a little bit easier. She's still doing fine. So again, anyone who's sitting there, average consumers, you were done reviewing average consumer with the Pixel 3a. If you need to spend more money than on a Pixel 3a, you've got to have very specific reasons for why you want to spend more money than on a Pixel 3a. Back to the, hold on. There we go. I wanted to get to some of the other family comments. Streamy boys, everyone in my family is tech illiterate besides me. They are either Samsung or iPhone. My mom is on Moto, though. I really think budget Moto deserves a ton more attention in the United States market. Because they are. They're streamlined, simple. The gesture thing, like, my sister was on a G, I don't remember. It was really old. It was the plastic back G, not the G5, but the Moto. I think it was the Moto G4. And that's what she ran into the ground before she got a Pixel 3a. She was on that phone for a long time. And I think one of the reasons why she liked it so much were those little things like, hey, I can just flick my wrist and the flashlight turns on, or hey, I can turn this over and the camera launches. And that's what did it. Like, that's what she dug. And again, those kinds of gestures and interactions made perfect sense to her when she moved over to a Pixel, and she had to change some of them, but she still understood, like, oh, okay, I can use this. From JMX, I have had many conversations over the last few years. No one I know has said they need more compute power. From Gabaletta. So this one's kind of interesting. I think Google saw how both the A88 and the A15 throttled under sustained use and decided to go a different route when making their SoC. My hypothesis, I'm not arguing with you. My hypothesis is Tensor was designed to come out at the end of 2020. So they looked at where phones were going to go. This type of fabrication takes years to build up, to refine, to kind of test and troubleshoot. And we've seen some notion that there's been Google CPU products being kind of used out and about. So I think their big play was to try and get it into a Pixel 5. And then that didn't really pay off. They couldn't get the timetable, pandemic, worried about distribution, worried about people being able to buy the phone, so they held off. And that's why we got the Pixel 5 that we got. And so then you eventually kind of have to put those pieces into action and operation. And so I feel like Tensor kind of got nudged at sort of the opposite 8-month window that it should have. So Tensor should have come out at the same time as the iPhone 2020 launch. But instead, it got kind of knocked to the following year. And so there, we're sort of on an off cycle from where it should have been. That's my guess. I have zero insight into the operations of a $1 trillion corporation. That's just what I think may have happened. From Aditya, battery over power. I hate carrying around a battery bank. I definitely know a lot of people who are not thrilled with additional gadgets to support their gadgets. From Streamy Boys, dad, bro, and wife are on iPhone 10, 11. Mom is on Moto One Ace, and sis is on a Galaxy A51. That is a great phone. And bro-in-law is on an S10. Like, my nephew's on an S10, and he is now just figuring out how much he can really do with that old Samsung. So let me finish up housekeeping, because that's hilarious that I've gone this long on it. I just kind of wanted to kind of hear some of that. Because, you know, there are so many other things that go into SoC design, but they're not as easily communicable to general or to consumers in general. Things like better AI machine learning hardware, I get that. And when you pick up a Pixel, and certain actions are so much more effortless in how it transcribes and sends messages and can handle your phone calls, that kind of stuff is really, really cool. It's not demonstrably measurable in a more consumer space. Like, I can't pull up three real world apps and measure the machine learningness of those three phones. I've timed how long it takes to accomplish voice dictation search. You know, like, that doesn't work. But the every time I touch my face, seriously, come on, Nvidia, come on, there you go. But, I mean, other things, too, like radio management, great. You know what you don't get a lot of is really reliable 5G when you're driving through mountain desert. So I can appreciate someone on a Pixel 4a still doing fine on their LTE. Better camera and ISP, hardware to support better images and better video. I feel I can demonstrate why these new phones take better photos than Pixel 3as and 4as. I don't see in my family a desire to be a better photographer to take advantage of that better camera hardware. You don't get better photos out of a Pixel 6 just because you upgraded from a Pixel 4 to a Pixel 6. It doesn't work that way. You shoot the same way on a Pixel 6 that you shoot on a Pixel 4, you're going to end up with very similar photos. If you try to drive those cameras harder for what that new hardware can accomplish in more challenging conditions, in different, you know, in more challenging lighting, in trying to maximize the distance between your subject and the background to fulfill or highlight that additional depth of field, natural focus fall off, great. If you're happy with the really outstandingly good portrait mode on a Pixel 3a, that kind of negates some of the real lens blur that you can get from a Pixel 6. I've made several videos on this, and the idea still really doesn't seem to kind of get drilled in. When we hype up, man, look at this new camera, and it's so amazeballs. And the person who picks up that phone expecting their photos to somehow magically be betters is shooting the same way. They're not going to see much of a practical improvement. Again, even up into like a mirrorless camera, if they shoot full auto green box mode on like Micro Four Thirds or APS-C or even full frame, their photos won't look much better than what they could have taken from their years old smartphone. When you let the machinery do all the thinking for you, it kind of just stays in that same tier of consumer-y snapshot, good enough for social media. It's where you drive and really focus on your composition and stretch that hardware to its limits. That's where you start to see like, oh, these things can do some pretty incredible stuff. Back to some housekeeping. Rode AI Micro. I actually packed this. I didn't have any need to use it on the road trip, but this is maybe the most adorably tiny USB audio interface I've ever had the pleasure of using. It's designed to be used with smartphone-style 3.5-millimeter lavalier mics. And then I also got a video out talking about the new TCL 6 Series QLED TV. I am a member of Team TCL, and they hooked up some TVs for us to try out and for us to use. And really, this is more my experience replacing an almost three-year-old Samsung TV that I have hated and is dying quickly, and this TCL came in the nick of time. So again, I feel like there are some quality discussions. I can't comment on panel and clarity and color and accuracy. I'm not a TV or a panel reviewer. Back in the day, I used to point people over to Erica Griffin if you wanted the lowdown or you wanted the scoop on phone screens. I'm the audio guy, and I can give you those measurements and talk about speakers and stuff like that. Never really been a panel or a display guy. If it's juicy and colorful, it's usually pretty much good enough for me, and then I try to do things periodically, like turn it into black and white mode so that I can, you know, kind of distract my brain less. But the 6 Series TV has been fantastic as a replacement for my aging Samsung QLED. And then the biggie, and this is like the biggest video I put together in a while for the public YouTube channel. I finally cobbled together and published my big phone camera photo showdown, the Pixel 6 Pro versus the Xperia Pro I versus the Vivo X70 Pro Plus. I adored shooting on all three of these phones. Each phone brought something amazingly unique to the table. This is a 30-minute video kind of breaking down photography and aesthetic and processing and the differences between three phones that are otherwise similar. Both the Google and the Vivo are using the exact same camera sensor, and the Sony is using the sensor from an RX100, but it's cropped down to a very similar surface area as the other two. So really, it's 30 minutes, and I only make it through 5 photos because I talk a lot. But to me, this was like this was that labor of love for putting together a commentary on why differences matter and why I'm so tired of techies talking about camera stuff, especially techies that shoot all their tasty B-roll on really expensive mirrorless or production-grade cameras. Then going off to, but you know, it's not really good enough for the smartphone. I mean, you would never use a phone to shoot something more important. And like, you would, because all of the people in your audience probably aren't investing a ton of money into full frame mirrorless or into production grade cameras. So yeah, they are showing up to family events. And yeah, they are trying to tell stories with phone cameras. And now we've got phone cameras where the sensors rival 16 millimeter film. That's huge. You know, The Wrestler was shot on 16 millimeter. Black Swan was shot on 16 millimeter. Leaving Las Vegas was shot 16 millimeter. And then there are all kinds of fancy tricks throughout history. Like all those spaghetti westerns that were shot anamorphic. Those were shot on like half frame 35 cut, then stretched. And you're like, the film grain that you see on an old, like, Sergio Leone film, I can't say that name, an old Italian spaghetti western, you would see this, like, stretched, big, blocky film grain. You know what? Your phone camera's probably going to look better these days. That's what's so incredible about where we're at right now. It's a legit, like, in your pocket, on these newer, like, 1/1.3-inch sensors, you've got something that's practically a digital Bolex. You know, you've seen those little like 16 millimeter film cameras that look like fancy ray guns and stuff. Your phone is probably already putting out an image that can rival that. And it takes very little to get something cinematic out of these devices.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Simon says, no, 8mm was shot in a casino, but not on 8mm. No, 8mm was not shot on 8mm. My grandfather shot 8mm though. And let me tell you, it's really cool going back and seeing those family movies from like the 50s and the 60s. I'm just, again, it blows your mind when you see like history and it's captured and it's presented and it's stored and it's saved for you. Excuse me. My daughter was watching an episode of Bluey where they were talking about Bluey's struggles learning how to roll over and to crawl and to walk. And the end of it is this really touching moment where Bluey's mom is describing her first steps. And Bluey's younger sister, Bingo, says, oh, well, you probably saw something you wanted. And from Bluey's perspective, you see her looking up at her mom and her little paws are outstretched. And it's this like parental, heartwarming, teary-eyed moment. I mean, it did. It kind of worked me up a little bit. But my daughter turns to me and she goes, oh, I can see my first steps because I recorded her first steps in 4K. My daughter is now watching a cartoon where they're just talking about Bluey's first steps. They don't have like a photo of it. They don't have a video of it. They didn't have something to capture that moment. They just have a nice, really warm memory of this little blue heeler dog, you know, walking and standing upright and toddling after her mom. But my daughter snapped, like it clicked. I don't have to listen to a story of my first steps. I can see my first steps. And that to me, again, like passing on this data, telling these stories, accomplishing this stuff. So like I shot all this footage for Thanksgiving this year. First Thanksgiving in the midst of a global pandemic that we all got together for, and I shot it hilariously in cinema and mostly in anamorphic, but with a tight cinema crop. And that to me was worthy of putting the extra time into editing that content, doing a little light color correction. I've got funky lens flares going off as my dad's like carving the turkey and stuff, but it was worth trying to put together something a little special because this was a special Thanksgiving. This mattered. It was important because this is the first time we had been able to get together like this in 2 years, aside from little sporadic like mom visits after being sort of, you know, in isolation for 2 weeks to make sure she doesn't get sick. This was a full house cooking and eating and laughing and playing games and falling asleep while watching football. So it was worth it. It was worth it to put a little extra effort into this because this is hopefully something we can look back on. And hey, remember in like, you know, like during the pandemic, this was what our Thanksgiving looked like. So, yes, Gabaletta, Bluey is a surprisingly good show. I just want to kind of catch back through the chat. And then we got to talk about the road trip phones, because I feel like this is the right place to transition and talk about what it was like hitting the road with 5 different phones. From TED Talks Tech. If you are not recording your family moments in 4K, you hate your family, Dominic Toretto. I mean, like, again, I make this joke often, like, if you're not shooting in 4K, why do you hate your family so much? I mean, I can appreciate it if, like, the most phone you could afford only shot 1080p, so you shoot in the highest quality you can, but why? Why are we pretending that folks out there who spent $1,000 on, like, a Galaxy S21 Ultra aren't gonna go and bump up the quality settings of their video, right? Like, to me, that's what's so toxic about our current tech conversation. Well, I mean, it's going to take up more space on your phone. Yeah, and it's going to be better video that you will want to go and look back on as you upgrade to 4K TVs, as you upgrade to higher resolution monitors and laptops and displays. It's going to keep looking better as your displays get better. So shoot some higher quality video and have it take up more space, and it's going to be so much more valuable than just like the social media photo that you filtered to death and then uploaded to Instagram for 10 likes. Let me get this out of the way here. Simon says hypno. I can imagine future Bagnells looking back on Grandpa Juan's footage and being super snarky about quality and the lack of OIS. So I shoot very steady video. I mean, even when it's not like magically image stabilized through software, like I'm kind of locking in there and shooting something. Like I'm always trying to make it look, or at least kind of on the subject, making it look pretty smooth. I just think it's gonna be funny that like 3 generations from now, they're gonna look back on this footage and it's quaint that it's only in 4K and it's not like holographic and it's not 360 degrees so that you could see everyone in the room, like all the other technologies that are gonna like completely disrupt the traditional arm's length. I'm looking at a screen and watching this piece of video. Tech Love and Mama is in the chat. Everyone say, hey, Tech Love and Mama. And so now I want to break down. I hit the road and I really had a couple of challenges in mind, and I didn't really get those done the way that I thought I would. But I've got some thoughts to share because I wanted to sort of grade phones. I'm going to be doing a full write-up on this on the Patreon. I'm not going to turn this into a regular video because the phone choices are a little odd. Like, I'm not directly comparing devices. It's not a showdown in a traditional YouTube-y kind of sense. But I wanted to get a handle or a feel on, let's say I had to just hit the road and I grab one phone because I'm a big dork and I have way too many phones. And what would it have been like if I had done Thanksgiving on this guy? And I wanted a pretty stark mix of productivity, compute power, camera technology, and age. So I hit the road. Obviously, I packed my Duo 2. So Duo 2 was one of the phones that was in the lineup. Vivo X70 Pro Plus, just because this camera has been rocking my socks. Pixel 6 Pro. Pixel 6 Pro, just because it's newest and hashtag Team Pixel, gift from Google, all of that fun jazz. But I really wanted to stress the camera showdown between the Vivo and the Pixel, because for all of the similarities that they've got, there are some very significant differences in where I felt each phone performed better. But then I also wanted something that could be a bit more computery. So I threw in one of my next docks. So I had a laptop dock to use with a phone. And that meant I kind of wanted to go back. And I threw my Galaxy S10e in the bag, mostly for decks. So this is a 4G, this is an LTE phone. It's not running Android 12. I thought Samsung was supposed to be so gooder at software. Remember all of those people that were upset about Android 12 on Pixels and how there were a couple little bugs in Android 12 and Google can't do anything right and we'll just have to wait and see how other manufacturers, clean up Android 12. Well, this is still on Android 11. So I don't know what's going on with Samsung, but they've completely failed and you should never buy a Samsung because they're terrible at software. I'm obviously joking. But I hate the commentary from tech reviewers because get over yourselves. Every software comes out with teething pains, every phone needs updates. But then I also needed a backup for all four of these, and so in the bag I threw in my LG V50. LG V50 over the V60 for better audio. And I feel like I might have made a mistake. So, if you've ever followed any of my videos, when you record audio either through the input or through the microphones, the V60 has all of this really heavy-handed audio noise reduction, vocal manipulation. It really brings voices out to the forefront. The V50 doesn't do any of that. It's a very natural kind of recording. And if you have noise in your environment, you're going to hear it. But I also feel you get a much better sense of the environment. So if, like, say you're out taking a hike, like we did one day, you want all of that pretty desert air, the birds that are chirping. There were geese that were flying south. You could hear them kind of honking off in the distance. And on a V60, that all would have been warbled, garbled noise. The noise reduction would try and eliminate all of that environmental sound that's actually quite pretty to have in your video. The V50 doesn't do any of that. So I packed the V50. Problem is, even with the most recent update, this is on Android 11. It took LG a really long time, but it finally got here. The desktop mode on the V50 is not as nice as the desktop mode on the V60. So really, this became my, I've got to shoot photos of other phones phone. As a production camera, when I couldn't take a picture of a device, hey, I want to show you something on the Vivo. I need to take a photo of the Vivo. I can't take a photo of the Vivo with the Vivo, so I would pull out the V50, and that's all the V50 really got used for. Oh, Barry Johnson, thank you for the correction. Barry Johnson is correcting me. Other techies weren't upset, Juan. They just said the Pixel 6 was completely unusable. Oh, I got it wrong again. Here I thought they were even just that one step more reasonable, that, it's usable, but you shouldn't buy it. Oh, thanks, Barry. I completely misread that. So, breaking all this down, I've got a Nex dock, I've got tripods, I've got camera equipment, I've got clip-on lenses, I've got microphones. The phone that surprised me the most, well, how do we want to do this? Do we want to do the phone that surprised me the most, or the phone that I ended up kind of being a little disappointed with? Let's do the phone that surprised me the most. Let's go positive first. Oh, I'm about to drop my receiver here. Let's just move that back so I don't lose my audio for this show too. The phone that surprised me the most, and is sort of emblematic of what we were just discussing, talking about camera improvements and productivity improvements and needing more horsepower from your mobile gadgets. The Galaxy S10e. Coming back to a almost three generation old SoC, the panel's only a little 1080p panel, but it's such a tiny little Mighty Mouse of a phone. It's still bigger than like my Xperia XZ1 Compact, really, really little phones. It's bigger than like my original iPhone SE. So it's still bigger than those other devices, but is such a glorious and wonderful one thumb kind of use. And it highlighted that all of the phones of this era, the S10s, the Note 10, the LG G8, the LG V50, are phenomenally powerful workhorse devices. Just most of them lack the 5G. I wasn't getting great 5G up in the mountains and often would need to fall back on LTE regardless. Even if I would get that little 5G icon, I could flip over to LTE and manage to get better signal, better stability, and roughly similar upload and download speeds. So what was the benefit? If you're on an almost three-year-old phone, there is very little that is going to tax this device, slow you down, or prevent you from getting a high level of work done. The S10e was a slightly better fit in this road trip, in this showdown, simply because I was really using this as my main laptop. Getting videos out, responding to social media, plugging this into my Nex dock, using DeX as the desktop mode interface, just slightly better as a compute platform than my V50. But this also would have gotten a pretty high degree of that kind of work done too. So, what ended up becoming my main computer platform were the oldest phones in my road trip collection. And that to me is phenomenal. We look at you have to buy this laptop dock, or you need a keyboard and a mouse and a portable display. Why wouldn't you just buy a cheap Chromebook? This is more powerful than most cheap Chromebooks, and it's almost 3 years old. So So as long as you can hook it up to some kind of display and you can type and you can move a mouse cursor, you're better off. It's all built in here. You don't need to manage another full computer and move data back and forth. You take a photo, you take a video, it's right here. You log into your accounts or you use a social media app, you're already logged in. And increasingly, in showing that kind of stuff off, a three-year-old premium tier device is still completely overpowering what most average consumers need to do when they're out and about. So those kind of ended up winning. Like, those are the ones, the S10e, and simply because of DeX, not because I think the cameras are better. The headphone jack is definitely not better than what's on the V50. I actually like the camera interface and the camera controls better on the V50. The microphone quality is better on the V50. The display is better on the V50. All of those things, you know, back and forth. V50, I think, is the better phone, but Samsung DeX is the better compute platform. So that would be immediately what I would reach for. I don't have video out on a Pixel. I do have video out, but I have just the regular Android rudimentary desktop mode on the X70, the Vivo, and the Duo 2. The Duo 2 could have done this well also, but when you get to the Duo 2 and you open it up, you get this aspect ratio of the two screens together as your main interface. The video out is very good, but it's more tablety. So what you end up doing, you have pillar boxing. So your display is cut up with black bars on the sides, and then you can only snap two apps side by side. DeX gives you more regular computer windows to move around and to control. So the Duo 2, if I needed more horsepower, like for example, and like especially if I wanted to do more video editing from just one single solitary device, if I needed more performance for individual apps and services, if I was really heavy multitasking but kind of narrowing it down to just two apps at the same time, or you know, kind of streaming a little video and working on something at the same time, the Duo 2 would have been better. And if I didn't already have an external display or a portable display to hook it up to, my little kit for the Duo is still remarkably formidable. So I have this old RAV Power battery case, and in here I can handily pack the Duo 2. Should have unzipped this before we jumped in. And I've got like a little, you know, carry pouch to keep it safe and a fold up keyboard, and I can fit in all of the chargers and connectors and the stylus. Having a stylus is really handy. I did need to use the Duo 2 to sign a document, and it's like, I could do this from another phone, but I really want the pen to sign it properly. And I also pack like a little mouse in there too. So if this were my kit and I wasn't going to pack like a laptop dock or a portable monitor, then the Duo 2 would have been the compute platform winner. Packing the next dock, I really liked using DeX. So that became sort of the thing that I was reaching for the most. But the in making one phone the total use case, the thing that really slows you down on the Duo is opening it to use the camera. There were so many family moments that just happened. I think as I've gotten older, I've really come to like flower photography as my main hobby. You know, like, I just need to take some stress off the day. I'm gonna go outside, get some fresh air, get my step count up on my smartwatch, and roll around in the dirt and take pretty pictures of flowers just to take my mind off of work and stuff. But you know, when I was really walking around with a mirrorless camera or DSLR all the time, I very much enjoy candid photography, capturing moments in real time. Like, I'm visiting family and two people go in for a hug, and you get that perfect shot of arms embracing and someone's face and eyes are closed, and you're like, I love those moments. I love capturing those moments. The Duo 2 cameras are nicely improved over the Duo 1. This is the slowest phone to use as a camera. The act of always having to open it, you can't really leave it in your pocket in any way where the cameras are accessible. So even if you were saying like, hey, I want to use it as a phone and I'm going to keep it screen out, you still need to open it before the cameras are ready to use. So then from there, once you've opened it, you've got to activate the camera and launch the camera from here. It is a significant hardware step before you can get into the software. And out of all five phones, there is no way to abbreviate that. Unlike Sony's, as you're pulling the phone out of your pocket, you're long pressing the shutter button and your camera is ready to go. It's probably already taken three photos before you even get the phone up to your face. On the Pixel, you're double tapping the power button as you're holding the phone up to start composing your shot. I mean, the traditional phone form factor is aggressively fast now at getting you into a camera interface. And now we're down to, very specific use cases where, an Xperia makes more sense over a Pixel because of just the immediacy of needing to capture a moment. Like if you're a sports photographer, the Xperia speed is something you would appreciate. So as much as I loved the Duo 2 as a tablet compute platform, whoa, NVIDIA just wigged out even harder. You know what? I'm gonna just kind of turn this off for a sec, especially as we're holding up other phones and stuff. You can see the full office. It's real messy right now. So this ended up kind of slowing me down in those moments. And the cameras are better. The cameras are better than the Duo 1, but they're not much improved over almost three-year-old phones. So when we look at the main sensor and the ultra-wide and the telephoto, they're very similar to the cameras that went into V50s and Galaxy S10s. So it didn't feel like a special upgrade in the grand scheme of all of the other phones that we've used before, and it took an extra sec to get everything lined up and to get it using. Get that out of the way there. So, hold on, I got wide-angle one. Dave Burns, thank you for looking out. Yes, there is nothing embargoed or important on the shelves at present. I'm done with embargo videos. At least I think I am, hopefully. But if I'm not, I haven't unpacked it yet. So nothing's up on the shelves. Aditya, I need to learn how to shoot people. I mean, with a camera, that is. But Billy Quizboy, Juan, what do you use for a mouse with Dex, the phone itself? So I don't think desktop modes are as fun to use when you're trying to use the phone interface. So like you plug an HDMI cable into a display and then you use your phone as a trackpad and as a keyboard. No one wants to use a computer that way. So it just kind of depends on the device. But oh, and I didn't even notice there was a hype train. Here, let me share this hype train emote. So anyone who participated with the hype train, I just noticed RicoMan17 subscribed, Rex Morgan subscribed, Al Sabakli was gifting tier one subs to Dr. Claw and Billy Quizboy. Thank you so much. That was awesome. Thank you for supporting. I completely missed that it was even happening. First of all, just using regular mice and keyboards. I show it off more with my Duo, but the Microsoft folding keyboard from the old Continuum days is one of the best travel keyboards I've ever used. It is fantastic. I also have like a little Bluetooth Sculpt mouse with the old Microsoft Bluetooth Comfort. No, I think it's called the Sculpt. And then for Dex, I also like to travel with some kind of laptop dock. So this is my Next dock. And so you've got display, keyboard, mouse, and trackpad, ports to connect headphone jack and additional accessories, a memory card slot, and a battery to charge your phone that also powers all of this display. I've got stuff rubbing on my shirt. This is not how you clean a laptop monitor. But you know, it's a laptop shell, so it takes up all this space, but you plug your phone in and it's ready to go. And then it charges your phone. The battery life is outstanding. And then you're done using your phone as a computer and your phone is fully charged. And every time you get a new phone, your laptop gets more powerful too. So I'm a big fan of these laptop docks. They now cost about as much as an entry-level, cheap, maybe year-old Chromebook. But I find your phones are probably more powerful than those ultra-cheap Chromebooks. This will last longer and is probably more repairable than many of those cheap Chromebooks, and because there's just less going on in here. And again, every time you upgrade your phone, this gets more powerful too. It's just a bummer because we don't have a lot of competition for decks. So I'm worried that decks might be one of those devalued projects at Samsung these days. Oh, and yeah, Skrzekazikikwals. I cannot pronounce your username. I am so sorry. Guys, do you know any viable alternatives to DeX? There really isn't one that you can install. So the LG phones had very good desktop modes that were just a hair behind DeX. Huawei and Honor. I don't know if the new Honor phones have the old Huawei desktop mode, but those I actually liked better than DeX. I have an Honor V20. On that older Kirin is still a phenomenally good computer. That Huawei desktop mode was great. And of course, Moto with Ready 4. The company I hope will make it more available is TCL. There is a special variant of the TCL 20 Pro 5G that was built just to work with their wearable display. They have an activated desktop mode that only works with that display. It is impressively good for a first generation desktop mode, but you can only use it with their display. It will not work with another monitor. It drives me crazy because it's so good. The first generation LG desktop mode was garbage. The first generation TCL desktop mode, mwah, chef's kiss, fantastic. But if it's not built into the phone, then you kind of run into problems. The other thing you can do is maybe look at something like a Fold or a Duo and then just screen mirror. Because, you know, this doesn't have the right aspect ratio for most monitors, but a Duo 2 naturally has a split screening, multitasking, tablet style interface, and it can work really well. The Vivo was not a great option for compute types of interactions. Like, you plug in a monitor and you just get a really tall, like it's an almost 21:9 aspect ratio strip in the middle of your display. But if you just need to hammer out an email, reply to some social media, you know, react, you know, like type on something, it's still handy to have something like a keyboard or a desktop, a laptop dock. You plug it in, you can use everything on the phone just like you would. There are a number of interactions where it's just faster and easier for me to set up a keyboard and type through those things, even if I'm not using the full monitor, even if I'm not using the full display. So it can still be kind of handy, and I still think there are good reasons. Like, you pack this and a little Bluetooth keyboard, and like, say you're on an airplane, this is it. Like, you can write, you can edit spreadsheets, you can watch video or listen to music while you're getting your work done, and you're typing on something way better than a phone touchscreen keyboard. Ever since the LG V20, this is now what I would use to write on airplanes, is a phone and a Bluetooth keyboard. It is just so much more convenient. And then, like, say you're on the aisle and someone needs to go to the bathroom, all you need to do is pick this up and move out of the way. You're not trying to move around a Chromebook or a laptop. It is such a pain now trying to fly with better compute electronics and stuff. But yeah, again, it's all sort of bit by bit. You've got to kind of cobble together your own solution because Samsung isn't brave enough to really give us a good DeX laptop dock. And that's where it really all comes together. If you have to do it yourself with a portable monitor and a keyboard and a mouse and all these other accessories, no one's going to do that. DeX is sort of going to wither on the vine because it's not really that useful. I can use DeX with a whole other computer. Cool. except it doesn't really work that great. I don't need a whole other computer to use the desktop mode on my phone. I can do most of that browser-based stuff in someone's browser in incognito mode. My brother, my sister, and her husband all work in fields where security is kind of a big deal. I can't plug Dex into their systems and install software and use their computers with my phones. That's a huge breach of their security policies. So I could plug it into a TV and then try and use my phone as a trackpad, but that's lame. So again, putting it all together, yes, a laptop dock is going to be more expensive than if you got a portable monitor, a Bluetooth keyboard, and a Bluetooth mouse, and then some kind of battery to power it all. But you're paying for the convenience of having it all squished into one beautiful package, and at a lower price than most, you know, laptops that you could buy near that price point with a device that's more powerful than most laptops you could buy near that price point. Sorry, it was really long-winded. The main showdown. So computery stuff, the Duo 2, very, very good, kind of slow for the camera. The Galaxy S10e, the best for computery stuff, with the V50 being slightly behind it. But the cameras do kind of fall behind a little bit when we look at the bleeding edge of the most expensive premium tier of smartphones. So I wasn't shooting a whole lot on the Galaxy S10. I feel I could have done okay on the S10 or the V50, but when I really fired up the Vivo and the Pixel, challenging indoor conditions, lining up shots of hands cooking and chopping up vegetables and mixing up stuffing and working with a turkey, you're indoors in a kitchen that's got kind of warm lighting with streaks of sunlight coming through, older phone camera sensors do have issues, especially when those phone cameras are so heavily focused on obnoxious HDR. So the S10, not bad, but not great. I probably would have been happier with a Pixel, like a Pixel 4a or a 4a 5G, or maybe even my Pixel 5a. I think I would have been happier with any one of those phones than the S10e for the camera. But the main showdown, getting into the Vivo versus the Pixel 6 Pro. Most of my photos came from the Pixel 6 Pro. Again, so much of this is family stuff, and I wish I could show this off better. Like, I'm literally, as we're doing this right now, my Vivo is uploading photos and videos to my NAS. That's how recently arrived we are from this road trip. The Pixel 6 Pro is a little faster to launch the camera. On the Pixel 6, it's like most other Android phones. It's a double tap of the power button, and you're into the camera. On the Vivo, this drives me crazy, but when the screen is off, it's a long press on the volume rocker. When the screen is on, that just lowers the volume. So when the Pixel 6 screen is on, double tap the power button, and you're also back into the camera. On the Vivo, you've got to, if you're using the phone and an amazing moment is happening right in front of you, you've got to swipe home and hope that you can get to the camera app in time to launch the camera to capture the moment. On the Pixel, it's hardware. On the Vivo, it's all software. And if you're comparing the two, the Vivo launch time from the volume rocker is almost twice as long as the double tap from the power button on the Pixel. So increasingly, cute moment with my daughter, dad's telling a funny joke and everyone laughs, my sister's cats are being frisky. If it's the moment, the only phone that would have been faster would have been an Xperia. Otherwise, it was Pixel 6, Pixel 6 all day, every day. But when we actually talk about the photo and video quality, these two fought completely different battles. So the Vivo became the phone that I would use to stage nicer photos. The shallower depth of field, the wider and faster aperture, the controls for Super Raw, so you could get a really information dense, much bigger RAW file from the Super Raw photos on the Vivo. Even from the portrait sensor. So there's a dedicated portrait sensor on the Vivo. When I wanted to stop and compose and set up a nice image, like the big family photo before we really got into eating for Thanksgiving, you know, you get all the family lined up and you get them sitting in front of the, you set the phone up on a tripod so that you can line up the shot right. There's the voice shutter action so my daughter could go, cheese, and it would take the photo and everyone thought that was adorable. All of that, Vivo. Vivo is just a stunning composition tool for that. But again, it's built a little bit more around the idea of you planning your shot. The Pixel is so good for candid photography. This is the long rambling way of me getting back to saying how like, oh, I used to walk around with the DSLR and I used to love taking candid photos. I don't love taking candid photos from phones, because phones often try to highlight or prioritize the exposure and the HDR color over snapping the moment. And so your indoor photos on many phones, your subject is gonna get blurred, or there's gonna be motion, or there's gonna be something that wrecks the photo because the phone is trying to meter for the darker indoor conditions and lift up the shadow detail and, you know, give you those bright, juicy, colorful highlights. You're not focused on the speed of nailing that moment. The Pixel still needs some work. There's definitely still some issues with some of the software processing, some of the functionality, and I hope Google can keep addressing some of those in future updates. But getting these larger camera sensors, I was snapping photos from the Pixel that I don't think I could have pulled off from a Pixel 4a or a Pixel 5a. And one of the major attributes, one of the major victories, is the telephoto.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, what's going on, Juan, and all of you tuned in to today's show. I'm Nick Gray from Fandroid. I've known Juan for quite a few years now, and you may have actually heard my voice from back in the day when Juan used to host the Pocket Now Weekly. If you're not familiar with Fandroid, we were actually the very first Android news site to hit the web, publishing our very first article within hours of Google making their announcement about their mobile operating system. Of course, a lot has changed since then, but we're still here covering the news, reviewing new gadgets, and of course, sharing our passion for Android with anyone who wants to join in. You can find all of our work on fandroid.com, that's P-H-A-N-D-R-O-I-D.com. But if you love video, and I'm sure you do since you're listening to Juan's podcast, be sure to check us out at youtube.com/fandroid as well. And that's going to do it. Juan, thanks for featuring us. Back to you.
The telephoto is a half-inch sensor on this periscoped 4x focal length. So it's a 4x zoom. It's 4x the focal length of the main shooter. That is a little further than I think we're used to. Like on the Xperia Pro I, that telephoto is a smaller sensor on a 2x zoom. It's like a 50mm field of view equivalent. I forget. I think the Vivo is a 3x telephoto, but the sensor on this telephoto, on this like periscoped telephoto, is tiny. It's the smallest sensor on a telephoto I think I've ever seen. So you end up using the portrait sensor, which is sort of a normal camera sensor at 2x zoom, and it's flattering. It's good. Not as good as the half inch pixel binning sensor on the Pixel 6. And why that matters. Bigger sensor, faster aperture, and at 4x. So it's almost like having close to like an 80 or 100 millimeter, closer to 100 millimeter telephoto. Again, I'm talking about photography and focal lengths and stuff like that, but it's 4x the reach of the main wide camera. That really compresses your background, and the sensor is already better at soaking up a little additional light. So cute moment happens with my sister and my daughter. I'm not right up in their face using the good sensor because I need the better sensor for indoor lighting, I'm across the room with a 4x telephoto, a 4x zoom, capturing that moment, and they're not distracted by me shoving a phone camera in their faces while they're interacting with each other. And that's the mark of a really good, candid solution. You're not distracting your setup, your subjects, while you're trying to nail that setup. So all these things, you can talk about, like, well, most people should be buying the Pixel 6 over the Pixel 6 Pro. Obviously. That's true. I still believe that. I still feel most people should be shopping the Pixel 6 over the 6 Pro. But if you get the 6 Pro and you care about things like holiday photos in dimmer or darker indoor conditions, and you're all sitting around family meals and stuff, and you want to capture those moments, the Pixel 6 Pro is so much more discreet. It is the best, like, sniper. I can just hold the phone up. I'm across the room. I snap that shot. I nail that moment. The sensor is doing so much more of the heavy lifting than previous telephoto sensors have done. The reach is fantastic. The background is compressed. The subjects are sticky focus. The Pixel 6 focus is real sticky. So you tap on them and then it follows them. So you can focus on your subject and slightly recompose your frame and then snap that moment exactly when you need to. And the Vivo and the Pixel are some of the best I've seen yet for really landing the moment you hit the shutter. Samsungs have bad lag. OnePluses have kind of an after action where they pick the clearest frame. They don't always give you the instant you hit the shutter. There's often a reset. So it takes a burst of photos and then it gives you the sharpest photo, but sometimes you can miss the moment. I mean, even in that quick burst. And then older phones, obviously, we're just working with much, much smaller sensors. So the telephoto sensor on the Pixel 6 Pro is bigger than the main sensor on the LG V50 and the Galaxy S10. So I can't tell you, like, for someone like me, I haven't shot a lot of candid photos from phones just because phones aren't really good at shooting candid moments. I was shooting so heavy from the Pixel 6, and just time and time again, I would think, like, this one's going to be a stretch. My daughter's reading a bedtime story to her grandparents, right? You know, it's just so cute and charming. Here's this 6-year-old, and she's reading some pretty advanced stuff, like Beyond Berenstain Bears, and like, my parents are just like, wow, your daughter can really read. But I'm not standing right in front of them, you know, using the good light soaking sensor. I'm across the room. And they're not paying attention to me, or they're not doing that. My mom does that fake thing where she starts posing for the photo, but she's still pretending to be in the moment. And you can kind of see it, right? You can kind of tell. My dad will just get distracted and, like, stare right down the camera lens. I'm across the living room. And it's quick, too. You know, like, I'm kind of leaning back. I'm talking to Marie. I just kind of hold up my phone, snick, snick. And that was the photo. And that was it. And no one was like focused on me trying to compose this nice family shot. Beautiful. So the full breakdown. I had 5 phones. I had the Duo 2. I had the Pixel 6 Pro. I had the Vivo X70 Pro Plus. I had the LG V50. And I had the Galaxy S10e. I would say for the compute-heavy individual, you'd probably want to go Samsung. An almost 3-year-old Samsung with some kind of additional accessory to use DeX is still probably the best computer platform. I would say the kind of the best jack-of-all-trades would be LG. Not the best desktop mode, but it has a proper desktop mode. Not the best cameras out of all the cameras I've used here, but some of the best camera controls and some of the best features for really capturing content and shooting content. And then also some just genuinely the best media player. So when you need that downtime, you plug in some headphones, you got the quad DAC and you're good to go. I'm not really, you know, like, I've been the LG nerd forever. This is the best all-rounder, was the V50. The best standalone compute package was the Duo 2. So if you don't have a bunch of accessories to make decks work better, then the Duo 2 is all-encompassing. It is every bit of a phone and a tablet all combined into one, and it's way easier to just pack this and like a keyboard and not have to worry about, you know, needing an additional monitor or expanding the canvas space or doing additional work from there. This, to me, would work really well. You just have to know that this would also be the absolute slowest photography solution. The photos are okay. The video is okay. It's a gooder camera package than what we had. Again, I'm comparing it to the Duo 1. But it's actually within spitting distance of the cameras on the Fold 3 also. I mean, we're really close in terms of that kind of camera package. And the phone's a little bit cheaper, sort of, than a Fold. Getting into the more camera-heavy stuff, the Pixel 6 is absolutely the worst computer platform. There is no desktop mode, okay, but there's also no video out, so you can't connect it to another monitor if you want to do anything else. You can kind of screen share, but the lag on that and the visual degradation of what's on your display, miserable. So I could screen share to a TV or to a Chromecast or something like that wirelessly. You'd never want to work that way. You really wouldn't. So even if you packed your Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, it's just stuttery and awful, and I don't like it. So this is the worst compute platform of the bunch. This is the candid photography champ. The only phone I think would compete well for nailing the moment is the speed of an Xperia, but the reach of this telephoto it's just stunning, even in mixed lighting and indoor lighting conditions. That is such a huge upgrade for a telephoto. It's so much different than anything else that I've ever used before. The flip side of that is, for people that are kind of more staging their shots and presenting the nicer portraiture of capturing a moment, the Vivo rocked my socks. Sort of mid-pack as a computing device, it's crazy powerful, but you only really have a screen share. You don't really have a desktop mode that you can use. But all of the additional features that go into this camera stack are fantastic for composing the shot that you want to take. From the voice shutter to the raw capture and the super raw capture to the collection of cameras on the back. The telephoto is really only usable in great light, but the portrait camera sensor is very good. That 2x zoom, that 50mm portrait sensor is excellent. So this is the one that I keep wanting to just put it on a tripod and compose and shoot. This is the Pixel 6 is the one I just want to yank out of my pocket and nail a moment. And that to me is kind of the fun. Out of all of them, if I'd had to pick only one, like I can only grab one phone and I'm hitting the road, and that's it. And like, I've got to get all of my work done. I want some fun things for entertainment and for playing games and for listening to music. And this is the phone I'm going to rely on as the main camera. It's really close, but I would probably have sided with the Vivo just by a hair over the Pixel 6. The Pixel 6 camera came in clutch for all of those holiday moments. But having just some additional computery productivity stuff on the Vivo, that's probably the phone that I would have picked as the overall, like the champion device. But I mean, like the Pixel 6 telephoto almost by itself makes the case for it being just like such a beautiful photography solution. That's the road trip, man. That was a lot. I was packing tripods and lighting equipment and all this other stuff. And, you know, it really was telling, like, just pulling a Duo 2 out of my pocket was so annoying to try and capture the shot, but it was so handy. Like, for one of the things, I had to set up a video call. And you pull out the Duo 2 and you angle the screen right where you need it, and you have your video call. like that kind of stuff is so it's overlooked because it's so helpful. It's a really fun gig when you get to kind of compare and contrast and when you're in the moment. So it's not just I watched someone's video on this phone, it's not good enough, and they said it wasn't good at these things. Really trying to handle these devices in those moments is really telling. Like it's pretty great. I like what I do. All right, I just got to get through. I want to kind of grab back through some of these comments. I'm way behind on the comments. Sorry. This road trip report card is going to get written up in a more concise fashion on patreon.com/somegadgetguy. McCorkerin 3, I mean, absolutely nailing it. What we need is the Pixel and its usability and camera to have a baby with the V60 productivity modes. When Google ever decides to give us like a true desktop mode and not just Android 12L, that to me would vaunt the Pixel. I mean, really showcase it as a platform for work and play. Again, you just kind of run into these roadblocks. Every single product here is incomplete. Like if I could pick two, like say I grab a Duo and a Pixel 6, holy crap, is that a good combination, right? All of the productivity and work and multitasking, tablet-y stuff, combined with all of the photography and fun and video capture and candid photography, and that would be incredible. But you know, again, if I have to narrow it down to one, then I've got to balance all of those compromises. Let's get this out of the way here. From McCorkerin, it would be interesting to see the differences between using the desktop mode on the S10e versus the Note 10 versus the Note 9, etc. I want to say that the major differences started happening with the S20 and S21, but the biggest changes to decks came from things like wireless decks and then plugging your phone into another computer for that decks on top of a PC support. I don't know that, especially going back to like play with the S21, that decks fundamentally changed from S10 to S21. So again, obviously there are very small little fine refinements and UI changes and things like that, but I think the major differences have all come from how can you support decks on other established computers, which to me matters not at all. From Gormlord, my S10e is my dedicated emulation device. It's crazy powerful for old consoles. I mean, again, Snapdragon 855, not only for old consoles, but what was it that I was with? Doom 3. Even old PC games from like that Half-Life 2 era, totally emulatable on a Snapdragon 855. I mean, it's just stupid powerful, and we never took full advantage of how powerful the 855 was. Oh, McCorkerin talking about the dedicated fingerprint sensors. Power button fingerprint sensor on the S10e, way better than anything in display. Rear fingerprint sensor on the LG V50, way better than anything in display. Power button fingerprint sensor on the Duo 2, way better than the in-display fingerprint sensors on the Pixel 6 and the Vivo. In-display fingerprint sensors can only be better than previous in-display fingerprint sensors. They have never come close to the physical tactile response of giving your finger a landmark to hit and the dedicated functionality of having that sensor not be a part of a screen that gets smudged up as you use it. Dedicated fingerprint sensors, I feel, will always be better than in-display solutions. McCorkerin also saying, I don't really use Samsung as my daily driver, but it's nice having a Samsung with a headphone jack. That is true. Um, From Allgreg, could Google open up the 50 megapixel cam so we can have use the full sensor? So you do use the full sensor. The main functionality of a pixel binning sensor is to bin pixels together to arrive at like a 12 megapixel image. The GN1 operates that way, where you shoot a raw photo, you don't get a 50 megapixel photo, you get a 12 megapixel image. So when you shoot full resolution on a pixel binning sensor, there is some fancy demosaicing which has to happen, because you don't normally have clusters of four red pixels, four green pixels, four blue pixels. You go red, green, blue, red, green, blue, red, green, blue. So you end up with a reduced image quality when you shoot full resolution compared to a true 50 megapixel RGB sensor. But it would be nice. If you're going to advertise it as a 50 megapixel sensor, I should be able to shoot a 50 megapixel image. I don't know if Google will ever give it to us. I think from Google's perspective, they're making the most streamlined camera app and the most streamlined camera experience. So I don't know. It's not going to be reflected in the RAW files, because the RAW takes from the camera hardware and from the camera firmware the full binned resolution. And that's always been the solution for these types of sensors on third-party camera apps. You don't really get the full resolution, the advertised resolution, because the main functionality of that phone is arriving at much, much larger photo sites by binning these pixels together. So from Rico Man, this is one of the major aspects of shooting on the pixel. Have you noticed how the 4x zoom sometimes just uses the main sensor instead? I noticed it last night. So here's what the pixel is doing that's different from every other telephoto solution that I've played with. Starting with the iPhone, when the iPhone and when Samsung's, they started going with two sensors of different focal lengths. Because I think Huawei might have been first for dual sensor, but it was two sensors shooting at the same focal length. LG did ultra wide first, but for telephoto, we're specifically talking about telephoto. There are two triggers where if you shoot zoomed telephoto on a phone, it'll kick you back to the main sensor, because the main sensor cropped will deliver a better image than the telephoto. The first issue is low light. So if you're in really dark conditions and you're on an iPhone, even on an iPhone 13 Pro, I think, it's very likely you're not using the telephoto sensor. It's very likely in dark conditions, it's going to the main sensor and cropping that image down to 2 to 4x zoom or something like that. Because a bigger sensor cropped is still going to deliver a higher image, a better image quality than a tiny telephoto sensor in dark. The Vivo is a very good example of this, because they have one of these super crazy, like 100, I think it's 50x zoom. You can barely use the super telephoto sensor on this in anything but the best light. It is such a tiny sensor. I think it's a 1/4 inch sensor. So it's like even smaller than 1/3 inch. I think it's like 1/4 inch. 1/4 inch type sensor. So that's one trigger. Super, super dark. Most phones will kick you over to the main sensor. The other issue is distance. So when you change up to a 50mm, 75mm, 100mm focal length, that increases the minimum focusing distance. And so what the pixel will do is, if the pixel detects that you're too close to that sensor, it can't close focus at 100mm at that focal length. So it kicks you back to the main sensor and crops down. So you'll see that a lot. The pixel, I have not found where it will kick you back to the main sensor in low light. Having a 1/2 inch telephoto sensor, even when the image quality isn't quite as nice, it's still better than zooming in from the main sensor. So the Pixel 6 will mostly kick you back to the main sensor when it's a proximity issue. When you're too close to your subject, it can't get the focus from the telephoto sensor, knocks you back to the main sensor, crops that image in. That's what you end up with, that shift. But where the Pixel 6 needs some polish, and where the Pixel 6 gets real funky, is when you switch from the main sensor to the telephoto, it zooms in on the main sensor, and then it can take almost a full second before it flips to the telephoto sensor. And you can see it in the viewfinder. I might even be able to show it on camera here, even though I'm... Okay. So there's the bookshelf behind me. I don't want to reflect all the lights. And I'm going to switch to the 4x zoom. And then did you see that jump? That was the switch from the main sensor to the telephoto sensor, because I'm far enough away from that little Cortana lunchbox that I can use the 4x zoom. If I were closer, it would stay with the main sensor. But so far, I haven't encountered any situations where the Pixel 6 camera switches to the main sensor because of light. It's almost always been timing. So if I switch to the 4x zoom and I snap a picture immediately, it's going to come from the main sensor. If I switch to the telephoto and I give it just a beat, it'll switch over to the 4x telephoto and I can snap a picture. If it's dark, I can still switch to the telephoto. If I'm too close, it'll stay with the main sensor. That was an incredibly long explanation of how light and photography works. But yes, you'll see it. This is absolutely something that Google needs to polish up on the app, though. I think it takes just a second too long, and I think it's a jarring transition when you go from the main sensor to the telephoto. Geet Madden, the iPhone 13 Pro does the same with kicking you to the ultra-wide sensor because the minimum focusing distance on the main sensor is pretty high. Lots of phones do that now, too. I think it was most egregious on the OnePluses, like the OnePlus 8 and the OnePlus 8 Pro. I had to turn it off. Thankfully, you could, but it was so annoying. You'd get into that medium distance, and even when you weren't at the minimum focusing distance of the main sensor, it would still kick you over to the ultra wide. And like, that is not what I want to do. Stop doing it. And it's stark enough that it totally changes your composition, and then it's like pulsing back and forth. If you're sort of right in that middle zone between the two sensors, it drives me nuts. But yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it on the iPhone. I don't like it on any other phone. I do not like it, Sam I am. So let's get that out of the way here. I spy with my little eyes too, some gadget guys. That's in the background, I've got my TCL portrait. And funnily enough, I'm wearing my red cap, which totally fits that. So I wanted to kind of spend a little time just sort of wrapping up some ideas here. I might turn this into a written piece now that I'm sort of out of this road trip report card. But I don't know that I'm really going to put together a heavy gift guide. I just tend to not do those types of like Black Friday sales and stuff. But one of the things I kind of wanted to chat out here, we're all pretty techie. Right? And I mean, if you're catching a podcast like this, or if you're watching a live stream like this, you're probably techier than the average bear, or techier than the average consumer. So I wanted to kind of break down some of my ideas, and these are legitimately things that I think I might be giving to some of my family members after speaking with them at Thanksgiving, just like, hey, how's that been working for you? Or, hey, what's been going on with this kind of stuff? Some of the basics seem to be the hardest things for people to pick up. That came out really insultingly. I did not mean it to sound that aggressive. What I mean to say is, cool tech products, right? This is $1,600 worth of smartphone. This is like $1,100 worth of smartphone. The Pixel is still like about a grand, depending on how and where you buy it and what features and stuff. Dave Burns, it's one dissension. I'm amazed that that's not like a Reddit thing that people are calling me out for. I just don't like his tone. I mean, he's not wrong about anything, but why can't he just only say nice things about Apple and Samsung like everyone else? Oh, I don't like his tone. I'm sitting with all these people, and we go to take a family photo. I set up the V70, the V70. I set up the X70. If you don't know how I feel about the Vivo, the fact that I keep calling it a V70 should tell you how I feel about the Vivo. But yeah, we want to set up the nice family photo. It's up to me. Like, they basically just like, hey, Juan will take the nice family photo of everybody sitting at the dinner table. It seemed like such a shock that I actually took a camera style tripod to set up a nicer portrait shot. And so I really wanted to help my sister and her husband take a nice holiday photo for their Christmas card, but we just didn't have time. The trip was too short, and there was too much going on with cooking and cleaning for Thanksgiving. We didn't get around to it. So, we hit the road, and I get a text from my brother-in-law, and he sends me a photo of like what they're doing to set up their holiday photo, and it's like an old music stand, and the Pixel 4a is sort of balanced precariously on the edge of this black metal music stand, and they've got it like propped up. They had to move their coffee table so they could set it at the right height. And you're like, that's a really basic one. They're a young new family in a new home with a kid and cats, and like they've never thought of just picking up a cheap tripod. So, I don't think my sister listens to this podcast. I'd be shocked if she'd even made it this far into an episode. But like that's a biggie. So, I'm looking around at some of these different options and some of these different solutions, and I didn't bring my tripod up with me, but one of the things that I think I'm going to get her for Christmas this year is a nice phone mount. So this is my Rode, but there are a bunch of this is the metal one that's got like springs so that you can really lock it in, and it's very skinny. So it helps with different phones that might have like volume rockers on opposite sides of the power button, or with other sort of phone form factors that can be sort of problematic. Like on a Sony, you've got a limited amount of space between the power button and the shutter button. So you kind of want a skinnier mount to lock that phone into place. But so I'm getting her one of these. It's a spring-loaded metal phone mount, and it has a cold shoe so that you can attach like a light or another accessory. And then it also has individual tripod threads so you can go portrait or landscape. But an inexpensive tripod. I mean, such a huge, handy, practical gift. And think about those people. Like maybe they had one back in the day when, point and shoot cameras were a big deal, but they don't really do that with their phone. You can always just use the selfie camera, you can always hold it. How handy it is to have a trio of sticks that you set down on the ground. And you set a timer on your phone camera app, and you go running around to the front of the phone, and you take your nice family photo out, in front of a meteor crater or out in the Grand Canyon. That's not really the shot that you want to preserve, like selfie camera, right? You want something that's going to look a little bit nicer than that, and you can do it. And so we're putting together like a whole camera package. I'm also going to be throwing in like a Jobby. One of the GorillaPods, just because I think they're so handy, and especially like, hey, you want to shoot video of like your kid doing something cute, and you can kind of use these like handlebars. I love like little tripods and stuff. So it's not even about getting so fancy, like hooking up oh, I'm gonna get her a gimbal. She needs to shoot the best video of her son, and it's gonna be super smooth. It takes too long to set up. It's another thing that you've got to charge. I know for a fact, like my sister would think this was cool and they'd use it a couple times and then it would probably just sit in a drawer gathering dust. My gimbal doesn't get used very often. And because smartphone camera image stabilization is good enough that if I can just put a phone on some kind of tripod and hold the tripod, I can get pretty close. So I tend to not go for this unless I know someone's really more of like, they're planning a cinematic style shot, or they're really into an action style photography that the additional motorized stabilization makes sense. I don't think gimbals really do it for many people that are trying to shoot family stuff. So I got some questions here. Ooh, Ted, this is a good one to keep an eye out for too. I think this is going to be a heavy gift card year for us, for games and for apps and stuff. But Ted, is this year it's all about software deals on Stadia, Filmic Pro, and LumaFusion, et cetera, et cetera. So good. So Geet Madden, this is a great comment. Hold on, let me get this back. Maybe you can get her a selfie stick with a tripod base. There is no sister who won't appreciate a good quality selfie stick. I'm going to go traditional tripod. And if she wants to do something selfie stick-ish, that's where the GorillaPod kind of comes in handy. It doesn't give you as much reach. I can't show this on camera. It doesn't give you as much reach, but it gives you a little extra something just to kind of line up a shot if you want to do that. But so many of the situations that I saw at this Thanksgiving family dinner were really set the camera down in the most stable way that you can. And the sort of taller selfie stick tripod bases that I've seen all seem really flimsy. And so if you go and get a really basic tripod that's built for kind of like a smaller mirrorless camera, those are like $30. I mean, they're so cheap, but they're overkill for a phone. Your base is so much steadier. If you catch my Instagram, I've got that long exposure shot from the X70, you know, streaking headlights and taillights. It's a janky plastic tripod that I got at a Target probably over 10 years ago for $25. And it was like, I was in the middle of another trip. I just needed something that could kind of reasonably set up my Canon 7D. So it's not really sturdy enough to use for a good DSLR, but it's just what I could get my hands on, what I could afford back in the day. I've still kept it because it is awesome for phones. It's not sturdy enough for a heavy mirrorless camera with a heavy lens. It is overkill for a phone. And again, 10 years and I spent like $25 on it at Target. That's a pretty good buy. So I feel better about the more traditional photography setup for folks that are sort of looking to improve their smartphone photography. Just get a real or a regular camera tripod. Oh, and like my sister is not about doing the TikTok. So 2Turbo asks, hold on, let me click this on. How have your GorillaPods lasted over time? I've heard stories of the ball joints getting loose. I think this is my older one. So I've got the heavier duty GorillaPod. This one's rated, this is the 3K or the 5K? I can't remember. But it's rated to be used with mirrorless cameras. I got it so that I could move back and forth between phones and my Panasonics. So I've used this quite a bit with my G85 and on, I mean, again, Panasonic lenses aren't that heavy. This is my older Jobby, which was really just rated for phones. And because I've been moving these things back and forth, I haven't been using this like mainline, you know, like this isn't used as heavily as, like if you only had a GorillaPod and that was your only tripod, I would imagine that this thing would wear out a lot faster. I'm moving back and forth between traditional tripods, mini tripods, GorillaPods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I have had, I can't remember which leg it is. So there's like a little scuff mark on the bottom here. I think it's this leg where I was bending it to try and wrap it around a pole. And it's one of these joints in here that the ball popped completely out and I popped it back in and it's still reasonably stiff, but they do age poorly. They do start to break down. They do start to wear out. So the heavier you use it, I would highly expect that these types of things, you just kind of have to factor that into the cost of using a GorillaPod over a longer period of time. If you can mix it up with more traditional tripods and take some of the wear and tear off of it, then they can last for a really long time. If you're mainlining it, a couple years, and I would expect those joints to start wearing out. Like, this is not going to be a forever purchase like a regular tripod. But this one has lasted longer than I thought it would have with my style of use. And when it's failed, I've been able to piece it back together. So that at least I still give it a thumbs up. It's just, there's a reason why old school tripods last forever. I've got my grandfather's tripod in the office right now. This tripod was made in the early 60s. This is a Vivitar. This is a Vivitar aluminum half. I forget what this style of leg is called, but it's a half cutout. This tripod is what? 20 years older than I am. And I still keep it in the office to line up shots and stuff. So we're really not gonna find this kind of longevity in a modern day photography accessory. They just don't make them like they used to. Especially for how stinking heavy that aluminum tripod is, even for not having sealed legs. Yeah, Fat Produce. I'll be honest, I don't use my gimbal very much anymore. It is very selective when I bring that gimbal out. Like, I have to know I want to use a gimbal style shot. And even then, I'll try to fake it. Like, all of the Thanksgiving videos, I'm doing like just a little bit of panning, or I'm trying to like scoop up. All of it's handheld. I didn't even take the time to like mount it and stuff. Like, all of it's just me holding onto the phone and trying to turn from my torso. And that's how I got a panning shot. The smartphone software stabilization is so good. I know the gimbal would have been better. I don't know that it would have been so much better that it would have warranted the time to set it all up. Oh, Laz Divine, that's sad. My GorillaPod only lasted about 6 months of daily use, but mine is the medium iteration. Very sad to have a limp GorillaPod. I can completely appreciate where that is going to be an issue. If you use one heavy, you're really using it every day, I don't think they can last. Again, you've got all these plastic bendy joints and stuff, even the heavier ones. Like, go and spend the money on a GorillaPod 5K. I don't think they're going to hold up to that kind of aggressive use. But if you're like me, you mix it up, I think they can last a lot longer. But I really look at my GorillaPods as being specific flexible tools, like literally what they're kind of designed for. But if there's any opportunity for me to use a more traditional tripod, like I've got my Peak design, which is holding up my camera right now, like that Peak design got a ton of use this holiday season. My GorillaPod, not so much. So, you know. Dave Burns, my dad has that tripod. Yep, that Vivitar. I mean, it's a baller tripod. And what I need to do is strip one of the legs and reseat. There are these bolts that kind of connect the arm. One of my legs is real floppy. And what I need to do is pop it out, clean it out, and then get some washers in there so I can tighten it back down again. It's never going to die. That has been all over the world with me. That has traveled all across the United States with me. It has gone through, I got it when I got my Canon T1i. Yeah, so one of those first video shooting Canon entry-level DSLRs. And I had it before then, too. So I've had the tripod and I've been using it heavy for almost 15 years. And my grandfather had it since the late 60s. I mean, it's just, it's never gonna fail. It's amazing. I love it.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a megapickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious megapickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Yeah, the aluminum tripods are very heavy though, Ted. Again, this is a travel tripod, so it's not full aluminum legs. They're U-shaped, so they can kind of stack, and they cut the weight by only giving you 3/4 of the leg shape. It's still remarkably heavy. But, you know, that heavy, that weight, it feels good. And if you need to, you could bludgeon someone with it in an emergency. And 2-turbo, the Peak design is such an amazing tripod, and it's apparently on sale right now. I just outfitted a whole bunch of extra shoes and tools. So I needed a backup key tool to adjust everything. I got one of those, and then I got some extra plates just so I could connect it to more stuff. So that wasn't going to be the end of the kind of holiday gift idea, though. The other thing that seemed to be kind of an issue were chargers. And this one really kind of took me by surprise, is, you know, we're sort of surrounded by chargers and cables, and yet we were always running into issues. Like, my sister had some old micro USBs and USB-Cs, but then terminated in USB-A. My mom has the OnePlus charger, but Marie and I had USB-C chargers. We were using backup batteries. All of these things were kind of a problem. Another just sort of silly idea. How many times have you seen, like, a family member kind of need to use their phone, the battery's dying, but they try to charge it, and they're, like, contorting themselves off the edge of the couch so that the cable can reach down to the floor where the wall outlet is? I can't think of better stocking stuffers than things like ultra-long USB-C cables. So this one is a fancy one. This is my Nomad. But when you, like, how much additional cable you get here, if you need a quick, easy, last-minute gift idea, you know, figure out what phone they have, but a USB cable, a longer USB cable, is worth its weight in gold. So, you know, like, I've been using this with the little Nomad wireless charger. This has become kind of my go-to testing for wireless chargers. I don't wireless charge a lot. But it's nice having something that can kind of, you know, just kind of stay propped up on a desk, and I can top off a phone if I need to, or especially for earbuds. Actually, most of the earbuds I use have wireless charging in the case. This cable came in clutch while we were traveling. We'd be in a hotel room, you know, in a hotel bed. My wife has to have all of the chargers, you know, because we're sharing, you know, it's the three of us. It's Marie, Lex, and I. Two queen-size beds, and you've got that little table in between the two beds. Well, my wife needed that for all the stuff that she needs, and my daughter would just kind of clutter it all up. There's never any other outlet by the side of the bed. Like, that doesn't exist. So we would run an extension cable off of a wall charger, and that would get a charger by the foot, by the side of my bed, but on the floor, and then if I wanted to plug in my phone and still use it, it's a really long USB-C cable that needs to be in the mix. So the Nomad one has been like my go-to. I've been now packing this, traveling with it. And I've got both the USB-C and the USB-A versions, just so that I always know, like, no matter what charger or what cable or what hookup I need, I've got some option to use that kind of stuff. Other things too, like we were just talking about for like office and productivity stuff, kind of blew my sister's mind when I was showing off a folding Bluetooth keyboard. These things are still super handy for a lot of people. And again, like my brother kind of got it. It was just immediate. You could go with a phone and a Bluetooth keyboard and still write and have a better experience with emails and, you know, kind of noodle around on some spreadsheets or sign some documents. Like this combo right here is crazy accessible, and it prevents you from always needing to pull out a laptop. So much of this stuff is kind of overlooked when we think of like GIFs. There's so many things we can do. We can do lighting for photography. We can do microphones for recording. Obviously, earbuds are going to be one of the biggest holiday gifts kind of passed around this year. And just to give you an idea, these are all of the earbuds I test drove just for the last 6 months. I can't even balance them all. So these, like, I think the most expensive pair in this would probably be my Edifiers. Oh, and my OnePlus Buds. So the OnePlus Buds are over here. Let me get these guys too. All right, now. So all of these, and I think the OnePlus Buds at $130 full MSRP were probably the most expensive. They were recently on sale for like $90. True wireless earbuds are going to be a hot holiday gift. I have a hard time with the recommendation on earbuds because everybody's ears are different, right? So if you can get a sense of what kind of headphones they've already been using, you can kind of pick and choose between all of these different options for true wireless and arrive at something that's probably going to fit them well. I kind of feel it's safer to give them something like Aftershocks because they're open ear, and then they can kind of decide if they like that vibe or not, or just full on cans. When we talk about like active noise cancellation and travel and jumping on airplanes or rolling down the street, you know, like road tripping and stuff like that, just a full comfy surround the ear, nice padding kind of, you know, headphone is probably the better bet. The cachet on that seems weird, you know, like if you're not spending AirPod Pro Max, or what is it, AirPod Max kind of cash, people don't always sort of appreciate some of those differences. Like, I've really come to love my Sonys as travel headphones. These are still pretty pricey, but you can find them on sales for half the price of AirPods, which is remarkable. I mean, this is a stunning pair of headphones to arrive at that price. But earbuds are tough because tuning how they fit in the ear or how they fit around the ear, I don't always feel as confident giving, you know, those types of gifts out for family and friends. I feel like the last time we did that, it was a lot of work. It was three Christmases ago. And we got earbuds for my dad, my brother, my sister, her husband. And my mom ended up becoming an outlier because every time I would try to ask, like, well, what kind of headphones have you used in the past? Like, oh, I don't really do that. I like to pull out my tablet and then I just use the speaker and I turn the speaker up really loud. Well, yeah, but you know, like when you're on an airplane, what do you do? Well, sometimes I'll just get some earplugs, like if it's too loud. Yes, mom, but what have you, like, you've ever sat and listened to music? Oh, I'm not listening to a lot of music these days. I really keep up with my podcast. Mom, I'm trying to buy you a gift. Help me out with any information. But she really wasn't into it. But that was the kind of game I had to play. Oh, come on, NVIDIA. That was the kind of game I had to play with, like, my brother and my sister. Like, well, you've done stuff like this. And then I would try and, like, really measure, too. She said she liked these earbuds and they fit her really well. So if I go true wireless, I need to find earbuds that are shaped kind of like this. And then I feel more confident that that'll be a gift that she will enjoy. That is not fun. But I saw my sister and her husband try and set up a family photo with an old beat up music stand. I feel a lot better about going tripod. So I like that a lot. I got a longer question in here. Aditya, I actually saw a micro USB on a modern day smartphone. I had to do a double take. That's hilarious. I'm so glad micro USB is almost dead for tech. It's still pretty common in audio kit, audio gear. They just refuse to let go of old cable connectors. You're talking about all these problems with family in a single house reminded me of how long it's been since I've seen my extended family. Heck, I've not seen my family in 2 years. It was almost 2 years for us, bud. I mean, like, I'm really not trying to take that too lightly. It was amazing that we got to do this, but it was a lot of work for us to do it in a way that we felt everyone was safe. Yeah. So, from Last Divine, holiday gift ideas. I'm trying to find a laptop. Where is it? I'm trying to find a laptop that he can use for studies, learning English, entertainment, consumption, and slight gaming, maybe something like Minecraft. It's always easy to say what you would buy for yourself, but when it comes to loved ones, it becomes so stressful. Price, quality, design are tough biases. He's 11, so I expect him to break the software, break everything. But also, I want him to love the Windows experience so he can become a tech guru for his friends and loved ones. Good luck. Yeah, again, every time I start thinking about the more core computing devices, I increasingly treat it like pets. Like, do you know your siblings well enough to buy them an animal that they would have to take care of and it would become a part of their family? If you don't know your family member that well, I think you would have a hard time buying them a phone, a tablet, or a laptop. Like, it to me, it's becoming that personal of a purchasing decision. But all of the things that surround it, good bags. How many times have you seen family members carting around tech in miserable bags? Like this is, I got this from TCL, but this is a North Face bag with excellent rear padding. So great back padding, great strap design with adjustable like chest clips. You know, it's, you could take a laptop out on a hike and be in reasonably good shape for keeping all of your tech from like just smashing into each other. But the bag I've been using again for almost 10 years now is an STM. I'm such a fangirl for good bags and love the STMs. But this is an Australian company. I don't even know if they sell this backpack anymore, but I've been using this for, I want to say almost 10 years now. Again, adjustable shoulder clips, really big, thick, plated back padding, secret pockets galore so you can kind of hide things. It's got the travel strap so you can throw it on your luggage. You pull up the handle on your suitcase and you can slide the backpack right over. And all of this is held up, even though I've overpacked this bag so many times. And the thing I love about this one is the laptop compartment. One, it's got that really soft, fuzzy material, but it's not flush with the bottom of the bag. So there's a little float. It's like just about an inch, maybe 2 inches, where the laptop pocket doesn't go all the way down to the bottom. So if you ever drop the bag, your laptop isn't hitting the ground, it's floating in the bag. And then the bottom of the bag, I love showing this off. The bottom of the bag has a little poncho. So when it's really wet, you can cover it, but when it's dry, you've got all of this extra poncho material on the bottom base acting as a cushion. It's almost like having a little mini airbag inside your backpack. So, you know, you wanna spend a little bit of cash and you wanna get someone something nice, I mean, check out what they use to carry all of their kit. Because something tells me a lot of people out there are just trying to make do with something that they've used on other gear, and it's maybe not working as well as it could. Pacostin beat me to it. Same thing. Gifting someone a small tech bag to throw cables, buds, SD cards, whatever, instead of stuffing them in a drawer. Or if you know someone has a specific piece of gear, like I found this little kind of quasi hard case, and now I keep my mics in this. So when I travel, I've got like all the cables and accessories and mics all in this little cute hard case that matches the hard case that I got for my RAV Power battery. Come on, NVIDIA. And now these two, awesome. You can pack all that stuff up together. My NVIDIA software is driving me crazy right now. I might need to turn it off again just to wrap up this holiday guide. But, you know, and to that same token, even just something as silly and as simple as like a little tablet stand, such a great stocking stuffer, right? So you want to prop up a phone, you can just kind of extend this. And you can take your phone, and you just kind of go bloop. You can prop it up, keep it in the kitchen, you know, stream some video, you know, keep up with something on social media. Then you can pop it out, make it even wider, put up a tablet. These things, they're like $8 on Amazon. I actually have the Amazon Basics version. So many different brands have sold this style of folding tablet stand. But I use them a ton, not just for my videos, but for just for keeping stuff, you know, propped up around the house. Let me get down. I'm way behind on the chat. Sorry. Oh, from Dustadore. See, I'm not gonna fight you on this at all. I have the Sony WI-1000XM2s because I'm afraid of True Wireless, and Juan always says neck bands will always be better than True Wireless. They're downstairs right now, but I have my One Mores. I have my OnePlus neck band in the box over there, and I still cart out my LGs. Those Tone neck bands, they're still so good. I'm sad that we'll probably not see a lot of software polish on those anymore, but I just, the little retractable earbuds, pop them in, the button for quick actions, those Tone neck bands have been phenomenal. Dave Burns. My family hates me because I ask them what they want and then I get it for them. I ain't wasting my time and my cash on something they might not like. That's hilarious. It's so much more practical. Marie and I are kind of doing that this year. Our big gift to each other is going to be, getting a babysitter for Lex, probably my cousin who lives out here, if she decides that she wants to help us out with this. But getting a babysitter and then going out to a nice, expensive meal. That's our gift. We're not anything practical for the house, not, you know, getting each other, you know, like wacky Lego sets or Blu-rays of our favorite movies. Like, we want to go do something just for the two of us. But we did set up a $20 limit on a gift that we could open. And we're literally just like, I don't know, what do you want? And that's how we're kind of picking those gifts. So David, I completely know that feel. It's hilarious. Gormlord, I saw an SD card adapter at the store with a mini USB connection and it made me physically ill. I am so happy. Again, I don't think the only thing I have that still uses mini USB is my old Olympus recorder. So I've got a handy recorder. It's kind of like the Zooms, but it's way older and it still works. So I'm not going to replace it. But the thing that drives me crazy is I've got to find a mini USB cable for it every time I try to bring it out. Let me scroll back down through the chat and we can start wrapping this up. I cannot say enough nice things about Peak design. In terms of small cable bags, the Peak design origami bag, the knockoffs are very nice. I would say go support Peak design. And especially once we saw how Amazon ripped off the Peak design sling it motivated me to buy another Peak design. You know what? I'm turning off the NVIDIA. Driving me crazy, auto frame. I bought the Peak Design Sling. So this is the bag that Amazon copied. And I had another Peak Design backpack, which is buried in there. Got a bunch of old camera bags that I bring out for very specific. Again, I'm kind of like that with like I am with earbuds. I have backpacks and shoulder slings for like, I need to carry this kind of laptop with these kinds of accessories. No, my blue bag just won't do. I need my book. If I don't have my book, then I can't do this gig. I'm going to be having these microphones with this kind of a recorder and these cables. I absolutely need my old Canon backpack because that has the right compartments for all of my needs. Such a bag whore. It's so bad. But yeah, half my closet are old backpacks and shoulder slings. But I had to get the Peak design. Again, so when you've played with some of those cheaper alternatives, and then you pick up like the real deal, I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, like, oh, well, you can tell by the quality. You can kind of tell the quality, though. The compartments are so much more rigid. The case, the padding for all of the pockets and things, just the kind of armor plate that you get on the bottom of this bag. The Peak Design bags are phenomenal. They're pricey. They are expensive. But I love the bag. Can't say enough nice things. You see, you know, like your family members maybe just have a couple little extra accessories and stuff, getting them a small bag, a small backpack, a small pouch, something. Kind of a big deal. It's a good gift. I really, really like it. I do. So that, again, it's funny, like getting to spend time with my family this year for Thanksgiving, a lot of their gifts are going to be, hey, I saw you were trying to do this at dinner. Here are a bunch of accessories that are going to help out with that. I was really thinking about getting my sister a camera cage for her Pixel because she saw me playing with my small rig. And she was like, oh, we actually have like something that we work with in optics while working on lasers that's similar to this, but it's way less better built. And so she was thinking like she might grab one of these. So the actual cage is only like $60. And it is really handy for putting on a tripod, connecting cold shoes. I spent the extra money just to get an extra hand grip so you can really hold on to it. And just this as an operational control apparatus for shooting phone video makes your video look better. You can just hold and move and mount and brace so much easier. So again, these types of things, this is overkill for most people, but once they set it up, they'll probably like it. And depending on their phone, they might even be able to use other lenses and optics, which is really fun. I mean, it's just really handy stuff. And then I think for my brother, because he hasn't been playing a lot of video games lately, but the few games he has, he's been complaining about his controllers. I might end up going with like a SteelSeries. Like the Duo has just been a fantastic phone and PC controller. Because it can go back and forth, wireless, wired, Bluetooth, and dedicated adapter. So you can set it up for using it on almost anything, which is pretty cool. I hook it up to Bluetooth on my phones, and then I use the wireless adapter on my little Nook. And it's been probably the best controller I've ever used. From Pakostin, Gurr, it's killing me. What are those headphones? Odysseys, LCD ones, some Sennheisers. Do you mean the ones on my bookshelf? The ones directly behind me right here are the Mobius. So good eye if you said Odyssey. They're the closed back planar magnetics on the bookshelf right there. And I flip and love these things. The head tracking is exceptional. It's probably my favorite version of spatial audio, even though it doesn't really do spatial in the way that like Apple's trying to highlight spatial. You have to hit a button that says I'm looking at the display, but once you calibrate it, the head track is so natural and it's very precise. I love those things. And TED Talks Tech, support Peak Design. They sell used gear on the website, but you still enjoy the lifetime warranty. That is a great tip. Go check out the Peak Design website. And if you've ever owned Peak Design gear and you don't really use it anymore, send it back to them. they'll sell used and refurbished gear. It is, again, they're such a great little indie photography company. I love their stuff. Yeah, 2 Turbo. Same thing on the Peak Design. The 40 travel bag has been my daily travel bag for over a year now. It's so nice. It's so good. Someone else had... A lot of people are talking about a different sales and gear and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, there are some 770s up there. I do have the LCDs. So you were right. I have them in a hard case, though. So my Odyssey LCDs are packaged up. I've been reaching for the Mobius a little more frequently just because of the Bluetooth and the convenience. But especially while I was going through all of those USB DAC videos and even on some of the comparisons, like I had the FIO BTR5, I can kind of jam some planar magnetics on that BTR5. So I always keep the LCD ones ready to go. All right. Dang, Juan, fancy stand for your Odysseys. Yeah, you keep some headphone stands around, but I have way too many headphones to keep them all out and displayed. Yes, 2 Turbo. Peak Design stuff is extremely well thought out, and the lifetime warranty on that is great. I snapped the silly little... they have a smartphone mount that's built into the Peak Design travel tripod, and it's not very well built. It's a very plasticky joint that extends to mount your phone, and it's super prone to failure. And I've snapped it a couple times, and they just keep sending me new ones because they know it's a fault in their design. Like, I actually have it on this tripod right here. So it's just built into the base, and you have this little hook and this little latch, and it goes yonka, 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 and you can set up most phones, but when it's latched into the tripod, this swivel joint right here cracks. It fails over and over and over again. I think this is my third or my fourth replacement. This isn't very well built, but it's a part of the tripod. It's super handy to have, and I've used it with a bunch of different phones. Even larger phones will fit in this setup, but you know it's going to break. So I've seen a lot of people complain, like, oh, this is so crap and it broke. So send an email to Peak Design and they'll replace it. And they'll just keep replacing it because they know this isn't one of the best pieces of their travel tripod, but it is. Again, for the completionist like I am, I need to get it back. There it goes. I want to have that feature because that's one of the things I bought the tripod for. From Geet Madden. Quick question. Does Amazon pay you when they serve me ads while rejoining every time I leave and come back? I hope they do, but they are crooks, so I can't be sure. I have no idea. I am monetized on Amazon, so I do get revenue of some kind from Amazon, but I think it matters more for subscriptions and stuff. I don't know that I get a ton of ad traffic from Amazon. So folks, just some gift ideas that I've been playing with for my family. Hopefully that maybe inspires some gift giving, some tech gift giving. I mean, that's not even before we get into things like other accessories. I think a good portable monitor is always a great thing to have. Like, it's a handy accessory to have in the house. You can almost always find something to do with it, even if it's like hooking it up next to another desktop, or if they've got a laptop and they can go dual display. Things like that are always really handy. I'm a little gun shy on things like earbuds and fitness trackers, just because people are so specific about the style and the fit and the finish that they want to use. But even that, I mean, like the Amazfit sales have been pretty good. I've always been a big fan of the Mobvoi. Again, going multiple days of battery life on the TicWatch Ultra has been phenomenal. You know, but even an Apple Watch, if you've got that iPhone user, you think like, hey, you know, just something to kind of track your steps and maybe interact with your phone and help you with notifications. You know, if you can find like an Apple Watch SE or a sale on an older gen Apple Watch, I think I still have the Series 4. Is that what I've got? I think it's Series 4. It's not going to tell me on the back of the watch. Is it going to tell me on the back of the watch? I don't know if it'll tell me on the back of the watch. But I still have my Apple Watch kicking around for those few times I still fire up an iPhone. Those kinds of things can also come in handy too. But you know, you could also go Galaxy Watch, TicWatch E3. You can find good sales on that E3, and you've got great hardware for a smartwatch purchase. It makes it a little less precious if they don't love the watch style, but you didn't spend $400 on it. So I just feel like things that we might overlook. And to me, this year for my family is going to be heavy on accessories. I know what they're using. I know what some of their pain points are. They're not interested in getting new phones or new computers or new tablets. I think we can make the stuff they already own work even better. And it's, you know, it's going to be pretty easy. It's not going to be really expensive to do that. So, Steel's Finest. I just want to highlight this before we get into the final wrap up. I love my new Next Dock, but I didn't start having USB-C port issues on my V60 until I started using the Next Dock. Probably coincidental, but sad I'm having charging and connection issues. So I'm sorry to hear that. It's kind of tricky to know. If you're really working a phone's USB-C port, you can wear it out. If you're going back and forth, the hard thing about the V60 is you might want to go back and forth between the phone's dual display and a proper laptop dock. And that's double the wear and tear. Every single time you have to bend the case and pull the phone out of the dual display case, then plug the phone into a Next Dock. Occasionally, the V60's desktop mode doesn't instantly fire, so you've got to unplug and plug it back in. So you've just gone 4 plug activations and deactivations to get that desktop mode to work once. That can definitely be a pain. So I am feeling the frustration on that issue, and hopefully there are still going to be some third-party repair shops out there that can maybe find a USB-C plug replacement. If you can take it to a third-party repair shop, maybe get it serviced, that could hopefully still be a thing that we'll see for some time yet. I don't know what the availability on something like that would be. So I don't know how long-lived our hardware is going to be on LG, just because the infrastructure of support is going to start whittling down. So unfortunately, it's just going to be on us to kind of take care of those LG gadgets for their remaining life and, you know, saying goodbye as they start to fail. So folks, I went long. I was really only planning on this being another 2-hour episode. And I just, you know, again, from last week's episode being a little weird and not really having news to talk about, I got rambly, which I do. I want to say thanks everybody for tuning in. If you've got some other gift ideas, please feel free to share them in like the comments on this video, the comments on this page, everything that we've talked about, all the housekeeping will be available on somegadgetguy.com. This one will get the proper audio version. I couldn't get the audio to work like I wanted it to from last week's show. So I think that's just going to be a lost episode for the audio subscribers, unfortunately. But we're getting into the holidays. I want to be careful this holiday season. Again, why I'm not doing the same kinds of like sale promotions and affiliate links and stuff. Stuff is selling out really quickly. These component shortages are hitting every manufacturer. And when something is on sale and you can jump on it, grab it. Even if you're going to try and plan ahead, as we get closer to, you know, the end of Hanukkah and we get closer to Christmas, that last minute buying really, I don't think is going to work this year like it might have worked in years past. If you can plan ahead a little bit and you can focus on experiences, I think you're going to be in for a better gift-giving season this year. I think gift cards are probably safer this year, especially for specific like restaurants or experiences or travel or anything like that. Something that can kind of help someone who's been sheltering in place kind of open up a little bit or do something. It's why I'm so excited about some of these cables and accessories and tripods and chargers. You know, like here's something that will encourage you to go out and do something with your phone that you might not have done before. So that to me, I think is one of the special ideas that we can convey this holiday season. It's not without purpose. It's not just me like, hey, you can do this for cheap. You don't have to spend as much on your holiday gifts. It's one, I'm really nervous that products are going to be sold out once we start getting closer and closer to, you know, Christmas Day. And two, because everything's so personal, getting someone a gift that fits what they already have, I think is kind of special. So I wish you all the best of luck and the happiest of hunting on your holiday deals, on whatever, you know, sort of affiliate coupon codes, sale prices, Black Friday into Cyber Monday, all of these big things that we like to do when we talk about the holidays, but also just that you get to have some fun doing this and you're thinking of those other people. And hopefully there are people that are thinking about you that same way and looking to do something special for you too. So I wish you a fond beginning of the holiday buying season. As we get into more fun tech and gadgety goodness, I'm going to have more videos coming out that are just talking about using these different things, putting together a camera video for the Duo 2, some more that I need to talk about on the Pixel 6. I still don't feel confident doing the deep dive camera video, but I've got some early thoughts on using that. And then I want to do some gaming stuff. I'm so heartbroken that Steam Deck is delayed that I kind of want to fill that hole in my soul with some smartphone gaming. So again, why I've been breaking out the Steel series a little bit more than I usually have, I've got an idea percolating for a mobile gaming video too. So be on the lookout for a ton of coverage. We're gonna be back, I think we're gonna be back for Thursday, TK and I doing a live stream. I couldn't do one from the road. And then I am looking at doing some other giveaways, hopefully clearing out my bookshelves of some review gear. So be on the lookout for that, because I think I'm going to make that a part of the podcast, where if I'm going to send stuff out, I want to send stuff out in ways that are already participating with people that are likely to tune into the show. I just need to find a fair way to do it for people that also subscribe to the audio version. But that's where I feel most of my contests should live anyway, is here on the podcast. So thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. This was an amazing chat, exactly what I needed to start my week off. So I hope it was fun for everyone to hang out here too. I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. Spend some quality time with people who care about you. And I'll catch you back. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.